Hello everyone, back again for another episode of The Daily Churn. These are a mini-series of episodes that I am releasing only online on the website, or if you're subscribed to the newsletter, you can get notified in your inbox as well, but I'm not pushing these out to the podcast players for now. I had a long debate with myself today whether to do that or not, and I want to just quickly say I appreciate everyone who left a comment over the last week, just kind of encouraging me to keep doing these. And yeah, it was really nice to see that. And I know the main complaint that folks had was that like the web player is a bit janky and sometimes doesn't work. It works fine on my phone. I have an iPhone 15 and the web player will just play even with the screen locked. But I think on some Android phones and maybe older iPhones, it will pause playing if your screen locks. And so I'm also adding a download link as well now to the site so that if the player is not working, you could also download the episode. And that way you can either play it through the audio player on your phone, or you can actually upload it into some of the podcast apps if you have one that you like. But long term, I think I'm going to keep doing these and then push them out to Spotify and Apple and stuff. But for now, I think just to keep it really easy and to get back into the groove of making these for at least the next couple weeks, they're going to be online only. So I apologize. But we're back. So the last week, it's crazy how much happens in the course of 1 week. I am definitely in the camp of people who end up doing too much stuff. Which, you know, itself isn't necessarily a negative or positive thing. It's more how you view it. And I'll get into that a little bit more because I took a journey somewhere last weekend. That's pretty cool if you are into like financial independence and FIRE and stuff. So I'll cover that. Let's see, I wrote down some notes. We've got some Capital One offers. Yeah, a little moneymaker there again. A little hack with United because my P2 is flying United now instead of Southwest with all the changes. But before that, I figured I'd give an update on Monarch because I talked about Monarch so much in the prior episode. And by the way, if you haven't heard the prior episode, you can find that online at thedailychurnpodcast.com. You can play it there or you can download it. And if you're totally new to listening to these mini webisodes, I don't do any editing. There's no music, there's no editing, there's no cutting. My goal is just to have the whole thing recorded in an hour. It's sort of just almost like a personal challenge, I think, because these episodes used to take me 12 to 16 hours to do. And that doesn't even include paying an editor who then also spent 3 to 4 hours editing it. So we're like scaling things way back, going super basic. And it's just going to be me talking, and hopefully it's going to be in a mildly coherent fashion, but no promises. But yeah, let's just dive straight into Monarch. It's been a week of me using Monarch, myself and P2, and I am still blown away by how good it is. Like, the honeymoon period has not ended yet for Monarch because we've gone deeper now. So when I first did that episode a week ago, I was just like amazed by the UI and like being able to add all my stuff using Plaid and these other backup linker type apps they use to make sure everything connects properly with like fail safes and everything. So I was just impressed by that compared to Simplify. But this last week, we've been adding rules. So in Simplify, I wanted to like their rules system of like when this transaction comes in, classify it in this way or rename it in this way. But as with everything on Simplify, it's just like it's clunky and I don't really understand why it's so clunky on Simplify. But now that I'm doing rules on Monarch, it is so much better. It's like a breath of fresh air. I think we've got like 40, 50 rules set up now where it's like every time a transaction over $100 that is gas comes into one of my accounts, or every time this, let's say every time a charge on a credit card that is over $100 and is classified as gas comes in, let's remark that and classify that as I have like a churning. I have a few different churning tags. And so now all of those transactions at gas stations that, you know, aren't just me like fueling up my car are automatically tagged as churning related. Like, it's wonderful. I've just been expanding that across all these different little, I'm basically documenting all these different little loops that I do, and then setting up rules for them so that things automatically categorize. And after a week of doing that, for the most part, most things, like 90% plus of these transactions that are coming in, are auto-categorizing themselves correctly. And I'm feeling pretty good that I'm going to be able to get to a state where I can use reports on Monarch to just be like, how much was my actual expenses last month? How much was my churning income and churning expenses? How much money did I move around to do these various loops? It should, in theory, show all of that. And it's been going pretty well so far. And I'll keep you guys updated as my Monarch journey progresses. The other nice part has been that it allows both P1 and P2 to log in under their own usernames. You still only just pay for one Monarch subscription. And then P2, she can just like mark things for review by me. And then I get a notification being like, P2 marked these 60 transactions as needs P1 review. And I review them, and usually a couple rules will auto-categorize all of those. And so that just fixes them going forward. And so less and less is being passed over to me. I've also been adding more accounts, just kind of trying to add literally everything that I can think of. And so far, I have yet to run into any account that couldn't be added, which is pretty crazy to think about. I mean, okay, I take that back. Like Costco gold, physical gold I'm holding in my house, I did have to add that manually. That's the only manual account I have. Another one that it couldn't find was Stockpile, but that's because Stockpile has been undergoing so many different like web changes. Now I think it's app only. I mean, and it's just like a kind of a burner account anyway, so not a big deal. But one account out of hundreds has not been found, that could not be manually, that could not be added. And so it's pretty much full coverage. And not to just keep harping on how good it is, but it's really damn good, guys. And then, of course, I mentioned last time, but just in case you haven't heard it, there is a Capital One shopping offer that should get you $157 back, I think, when you sign up for a year. And a year is only $99. So right off the bat, that should be like a $57 moneymaker. And then I think a couple people were like, it wasn't tracking correctly. So definitely keep an eye out on how Capital One is tracking it. And if it's not, you might need to file a ticket for it. And then if you use a referral code, which I have on the site, appreciate it if you use it, that gets you 50% off the first year. And I believe it is possible to stack both of them. So it ends up being like $100 moneymaker. So yeah, pretty nice. And have another Capital One shopping related moneymaker that I was going to share. Let me see where that one was. Oh yeah, Kraken. It's probably Kraken, like the sea monster. It's the crypto app. And Kraken right now on Capital One, because Doctor of Credit had an article about Kraken, I want to say like a week or two ago, and it was like, you know, you can get like $85 if you sign up using Top Cashback. And so I was just kind of browsing the Kraken website being like, do I already have an account at Kraken? It turns out I didn't. But the nice part is when you browse these sites and you have that Capital One shopping extension activated, just like have it, you know, installed on Chrome or whatever, it tracks everything, right? And you know, you, depending on how you feel about being tracked everywhere, I've given up on trying to have places not track me, so I don't really care on my end. But from a privacy standpoint, yeah, it's terrible. But from a deal standpoint, it's great because it tracks you everywhere. And then within like 24 hours, it sent me a Capital One shopping offer of $220 if you sign up with Kraken. And then I think it's make one trade totaling at least $100 of cryptocurrency in that first 30 days. I'll put a screenshot to this in the show notes. But yeah, I mean, amazing deal for just signing up and making one trade. So I just signed up for that today. I also stacked it with a referral code. So if you grab a referral code, I think it gives you $50 once you make a $200 trade. And it gives a person referring you $50. And I believe they'll stack because during the signup flow, I was able to put a referral code into the signup page while my Capital One shopping offer showed as activated. So, I mean, no promises again, because I'm literally doing this today, but I think you should be able to stack the $220 plus the $50 referral code. And shout out to Ryan CA, I used your referral code from the Discord, but if you guys need one, I'll post mine in the show notes as well. And hopefully it's like an easy, like, what is that, like basically $300 for trading $200 worth of crypto, because the referral code requires a $200 trade, not just a $100 trade. So that was a pretty easy one. Capital One Shopping is still by far my favorite extension right now, because I think they really like did a good job of like how they're targeting people and how the deals are released, because there is kind of like a mystery dopamine hit component to this, where I'll browse a site and I don't know what offer they're going to send me. So like I find myself clicking every single Capital One email that comes into my inbox. And I don't do that with, like, I don't click Rakuten or Be Frugal or Top Cashback email marketing things, but I click every single Capital One email on the off chance that they give me like a higher offer. And it's been great because, like, for the most part, they do beat out every other shopping extension. So a couple examples of things that I've ordered recently in the last few weeks, Athletic Greens. It's like not an Athletic Greens commercial, even though it'd be nice if they sponsored this podcast. I hear they pay out quite a bit of money, which is why everyone promotes the crap out of them. But on Capital One Shopping, if you wait long enough, they'll send you an offer of, so the most recent one I got was 65% off of your AG1 order. The one I did a few weeks ago was 70% off of your AG1 order. And that one only showed up in the Capital One Shopping app. So they have a Capital One Shopping extension app. So, and that one has other targeted offers that they will like email you in the little inbox on the app. And some of those can be really, really high, like 70% off AG1. The 65% I just received via email, usually they target me for like 10 or 20%. But I guess if you don't like do anything for a while, occasionally you'll get a 65%. And that's amazing because AG1 is way overpriced for what you're getting. I enjoy it just because, you know, I don't really eat other vitamins or supplements, but it is very overpriced. So getting 2/3 off of AG1, what you can do is you can max out your order. I think the max they'll let you order as a new customer is like five full packets. Each packet is good for a month. So like 5 months worth. So I think my order was like $400, and then Capital One actually paid out like $300 to me for that AG1 order. So a great way to like try it, or if you drink AG1 already, it's a great way to just like get it for really cheap. Another Capital One shopping offer that I just did a couple days ago was StubHub. And StubHub, like for example, we can do a comparison. Like I'll go to Cashback Monitor right now and we'll put in StubHub. And the top StubHub cashback is 11% through Active Junkie. I've never actually used Active Junkie. Do you guys know if that one is any good? But like Rakuten is 4%, top cashback is 5%, rebates me is 4%, retail me not is 4%. Yeah, so that's typical for StubHub. But with StubHub, if you're just browsing like tickets on StubHub and you have the Capital One shopping extension installed, they'll target you. And the one that I consistently get targeted for is 20%. And 20% is pretty good. We just bought some Lorde tickets because she has a new album. And then my sister-in-law really, really loves Lorde. They were like, it was like $900 for three tickets. But with Capital One shopping, 20% off that, you get like $200 back. And so the tickets only ended up being like 240, I think, a ticket, which like is still pretty high, but like that's almost like at this point, you know, with concerts selling out constantly, like 240 for like pretty close to the front tickets for Lorde, given that she's out on a new album tour, is pretty good. If you were buying Taylor Swift tickets, I don't know. So yeah, it's those are the main ones I've been maximizing, but it's good to just have that extension on all the time because you never know what you're going to be targeted on. And if someone can like make an app that just tells me what the best Capital One shopping offers are for all merchants, that would be really nice. But they would probably also get like a cease and desist from Capital One. All right, in other news, I also ran into or stumbled across a little United hack. So I've been flying United more, or more specifically, P2 has been flying United more. Because with like the Southwest changes where they now charge for like a checked bag, there was a time where she needed a checked bag and we're like, well, it's just like basically the same amount of points to fly through United instead, let's do that. And especially if you have like one of those United cards, we'd recently opened the United business cards for her and myself back when the offer was like 100 or 125,000 miles for spending, I think 5K. We had United miles and we have the United card, and having any United credit card gets you free checked bags. So I put her on one of those flights like a few months back. And since then, she's just like, I'm never flying Southwest again. Because it is really a better experience than Southwest. Like I'm a man of the people. I'm down for Southwest. I like the democratic queuing system. I like that, you know, we're all just in it together on Southwest. And I don't really mind airports or that kind of like chaos. But for like P2, she's like overstimulated easily and prefers a more chill boarding experience, and you know, honestly, more comfortable seats. And United offers that. And so we had the miles. I put P2 on United to go to the East Coast. And a couple interesting things happen with United when you have their business card. So one thing is that, yeah, you get the free checked bags. The other is that at check-in, you can pick a preferred seat instead of just the regular seat. And preferred, I think all preferred means on United is you're further up the plane, but it's still nice. You know, instead of being in the back of the plane at check-in, you can move yourself up. The other thing that's really nice at check-in, and I've been doing more recently, is United will offer you upgrades to first class. Not just if you have status. I mean, obviously, if you have status, you'll be on the upgrade wait list, and then anyone's guess whether or not you clear that list, depending on how busy your airport is and how many 1Ks and all this stuff is. But they also offer the ability for you to just pay cash and you just skip that entire upgrade list. You skip all the 1Ks, you know, on that flight, and you can just pay for the upgrade, because for them, they'd rather sell it to you for cash than not. So on flights that aren't super busy, the upgrade price is actually pretty reasonable. Like, I you know, for a while there when we were like really deep into Lean Fire, like I would have, you know, never paid that. But now that like we're making a bit of income, I'm like $150, which is often what comes up for my wife to fly to the East Coast. $150 to go into first class for like a 3-hour flight. I mean, would you do it? I mean, right? It's a pretty good deal. Like United first class is like obviously not like international first class, but the seats are really big. They're really comfy. They recline further back. You'll get a meal. They'll serve you like hamburgers and drinks and all this stuff. Yeah, it's just kind of a nice experience. And I've been doing that for P2. And recently I had to book a flight. I'm like, oh man, it's just $150? Because the flight itself was only 15,000. And so it's always a debate for me whether or not to do it. And we've been doing it more often. And so that's one of the perks with United you can't get with Southwest. The other thing, though, that I don't think a lot of people know, like I didn't know until I stumbled across this a couple days ago, was that if you're on the United site directly and you're logged in and you're searching for award tickets, they will show you inventory that doesn't show up on like Pointsier or Award Tool. They call it, it was like the one I saw was like 50% off for card members only. So because we have the United credit card, they have a couple flights for each day that I was looking that are anywhere from like 20 to 50% off. So there was like a flight that was like at 8 a.m. in the morning that was 15K, you know, and a flight at like 9 p.m. at night that was 15K, and everything else was 30K. And so the 15Ks, the 8 a.m. and the 9 p.m., those were the only two flights that showed up at 15K on Pointier and a War Tool. But when I'm logged into United, I saw like another flight or two that were 15K. It was 50% off of the 30,000 miles. And that doesn't show up anywhere. That inventory is totally secret unless you're logged in. And so I ended up booking a flight out to the West Coast and back, both using that card member exclusive that wasn't showing up. So there is some benefit to being logged in and doing that. I'm not sure if there's any other tool that will show you that kind of inventory, but at least like things like Pointier and a War Tool are not showing it. And so that's another perk of the United credit card. Sadly, I don't think the United card offer is at 100K anymore, but if you have one, you know, something to keep an eye out for sure. Shifting gears a little bit because we're just gonna change topics because there's no transition music anymore in these episodes, and I do want it to be kind of a recap of stuff I've been up to this last week. This isn't directly churning related, but if you are doing the financial independence thing or trying to or wanting to, you might have some tangential interest in this, which is that I visited the Mr. Money Mustache HQ last weekend. They were having a meetup there. And if you're not aware, Mr. Money Mustache has a HQ and it's in Colorado, and I live in Colorado. And so I just kind of drove over there for one of their meetups. And it was pretty cool. You know, it was like, I mean, it was really the first meetup that I've gone to where I literally didn't know anyone. Like, I haven't even really gone to any like in-person churning meetups. And so this is for like the FI, financial independence community. It was super casual, no agenda. There was like 30, 40 people there who just showed up at like 9 a.m. On a Saturday. And we kind of just hung out and sat in a big circle and introduced ourselves and just kind of talked about like what we're up to or have questions on about the FIRE journey. And I like, it was a really, really nice 2 hours. I didn't think that I would enjoy it as much as I did. I mean, of course, like the first like 20, 30 minutes was kind of awkward where everyone was sort of getting situated. They had a facilitator, but they hadn't really started. They were waiting for people to trickle in. And so there was like, oh, a bit of awkwardness around, who should I go talk to? Should I introduce myself? What are we all doing here? But once it got rolling, it really got rolling, you know? And it was nice to just kind of hear people talk about their FIRE journey, their experience. A lot of people aren't fired yet, but some of them in that room were. And it kind of just like turned into like a 30-person group therapy session because some stuff that came up really resonated with me and my journey as well. You know, just this like feeling of, and I posed this question to the group, so maybe I started this this therapy session, but I was just like, do you guys ever feel like, you know, you stopped working and there's this sense of like needing to do stuff? There's almost a sense of anxiety around, I'm not doing anything, I should be doing something. And then before you know it, you're working more now. And I say work in quotes, but you know, you're just doing more stuff now than you did while you were working. And that got a lot of head nods, and that spurred a lot of the good discussion around like what is work and what is life after work. You know, I think I'm grateful that I'm in a position where I get to kind of explore this because my parents, for example, they never really experienced life without work. So this was never a question that popped into their heads. But for a lot of us in that group, it was like, yeah, you know, we work and hold on, my dog is biting the crap out of our robot vacuum. She hates that thing. Okay, I think my wife has it handled. Yeah, if you hear loud clattering and my wife shouting no, that's my dog and my wife. Where was I? Yeah, work. It's like, I guess the example would be like for me, you know, while I was working, I was like, oh, I hate working. When can I stop working? How can I stop working? What can I do? you know, my wife was similar. Like, what can we do to, so we don't have to do this for the rest of our lives? And FIRE was that solution, financial independence, retire early. But for me, you know, after firing in 2021, I started doing a lot of stuff, you know, started traveling more once we could with COVID, started this podcast in 2021. And it's getting to a point where, like, especially with travel, you know, we traveled so much that at one point I was just like, what am I running away from with all this travel? You know, like, what am I doing where all my whole day is just basically planning for trips and then going on trips, coming back, being depressed for a bit, and then planning for the next trip, you know? And then with work too, it's like training has been a hobby. This podcast has been a hobby, but I'm constantly like being pulled, not by anyone, just by myself, my brain, into like doing more, like making this into more, like spending more time on it and building it up and like growing it and all this stuff. And I have to like consciously and actively try to not do that, because the natural pattern is to work more and to do more. And what I kind of gleaned from everyone else at this meetup was that that's a pretty common thing, because I have spent 3 decades working, being very productive, working more, outworking, I think, than a lot of my peers. And so, of course, like my brain is wired that way. The patterns and the ruts that I've created for myself means that if I'm not careful, I just gravitate towards doing more stuff. But that also kind of brings up this interesting point, and not to make this into a really philosophical episode, but like the difference between things that excite you, things that you have to do, and things that are a passion, they all can kind of get commingled. Like when you're working, it's like, okay, this is work, you know, I have to do the work, and then maybe one day I don't have to work. But then when you stop working, it's like, okay, there's so many things I could be doing that are exciting. Especially if you're someone with like ADHD, like me, a lot of things are very exciting. And so using like, is this exciting? Is this interesting as a gauge for whether or not I should do something is not a great gauge, because I will burn myself out doing things that are exciting and interesting until they're not, because I've done, you know, I've just went too hard on them. And a lot of people at that meetup were there on sabbatical. That's a pretty common thing that they recommend in the Mr. Money Mustache community, is that before you retire, because, you know, retirement may not be within your immediate reach, go on a sabbatical. Most companies will let you go on a 3-month or a 6-month or a 1-year sabbatical, and try that out first. And it's just fascinating to hear people's experiences on these sabbaticals, because like one guy was like, you know, I was going to quit my job, and then instead they offered me a 3-month sabbatical. So I was like, sure, okay, I'll take the sabbatical, you know, like I'm so stressed at work, like some kind of a break would be better. So on this sabbatical, he was like, well, I really enjoy biking. I want to go bike the Pacific Coast Trail and just bike that for a month. And he's like, okay, cool, let's do that. And so now, like a month into a sabbatical, he's like planning for this 1-month long bike ride. And in this meetup, he was just like, man, it feels like I'm back at work planning this bike ride for a month. Like, I'm realizing that like I've removed myself from work, but I haven't removed myself from me. You know, as the saying goes, like wherever you go, there you are. Like, I'm still this person, and maybe like the way my attitude towards work, you know, the stress I feel from working was never really directly about work itself. It's part of who I am, and I'll like transfer that energy to anything I do, including my hobbies, like going on this bike ride. And I resonated really hard with that, because I'm just like, that's exactly like me in a nutshell, which is was unhappy at work, no longer working, still was like, I don't feel like, yeah, I feel like I should be doing something, I'm not happy, and then go travel a bunch. And then after traveling a bunch, you're like, this still doesn't. What if I like focus more on my hobbies, like podcasting, and do that? And then it's still just me, you know, and I'm still dealing with the same issues that I've always dealt with, which is like, I can't sit still without feeling like I should be doing something. It's something that runs in my family. And I think it's less genetic than it is upbringing. And yeah, and some might just call that ADHD. But that's kind of the stuff I'm working with. And I'm going into this now because someone just an hour or two ago had mentioned this on the Discord. They were like, hey, Kai, I just listened to your weekly recap from a week ago. And it sounds like you're like working like 40 hours a week, man. Are you between churning and then managing the Discord and then doing the podcast? Are you working like 40 hours a week? What happened to the fire thing? And I'm like, dude, yeah, you hit the nail right on the head, which is that like my natural pattern is just to do things like 40, 60 hours a week until I burn myself out. And I haven't quite figured out how not to do that yet. And that is sort of my my journey and my work in progress. I'd love to hear it if you guys have similar experiences or if you figured out something on how to like kind of address that. But it was kind of helpful to see so many people in the FIRE community with similar traits and similar issues. And the discussion kind of reminded me a lot about our little churning community, you know, like one guy said it. He was like, we're all here because, you know, we're interested in this case, financial independence. But really, we're here to meet people and kind of just like chat and bond and like share our struggles and our wins and stuff. And when he said that, I was like, dude, that sounds just like the churning community. You know, we all are interested in churning for one reason or another. But at the end of the day, like the thing that goes deeper than just the churning is what gets us together. Yeah. And then like what keeps us together is the fact that like we meet people with similar interests. That's pretty cool. And we have people to share when things don't go right or when things do go right. So anyways, that was probably like the best part of my week over the last week was going to that meetup and having these kinds of reflections. And then that's been in the back of my head this whole week. There's a couple things I want to quickly recommend related to this, which is that there is a guy, Oliver Berkman, who writes this newsletter called The Imperfectionist, which is really about how to like, it's for people who are perfectionists. So if you don't feel like you are, this probably isn't the best newsletter. But if you have a streak of perfectionism, he writes newsletters about like just his reflections on it. He wrote that Meditation for Mortals book that I recommended a few months back. But his latest newsletter post, and I think you can just go to Oliver Berkman and just read it. I'll link to it in the newsletter. Was such a good article. I won't spoil it, but the TLDR is sort of just like, I think a lot of people, myself included, for a long time thought that if I wasn't a perfectionist and if I didn't do things all the time and if I like cured, quote unquote, this trait of mine, like that would be a bad thing because what am I just going to like sit on the couch and not do anything? Am I just going to like submit crappy work reports or, you know, like, am I just going to do a bad job at everything and then sit at home playing video games, you know? And this article kind of tackled that head on, which is that like, maybe in the short run that might happen because there go my dogs. I think they bit the vacuum again. I might have to warranty this vacuum soon. In the short run that might happen because it's like if you do a lot of stuff and it's coming from this place of like anxiety, of fear, which is where mine comes from, I think, of like, well, if I don't do these things, everything's gonna like, I'm gonna be broke or no one's gonna like me or all these kind of things that my parents kind of inadvertently taught me. Then if you get rid of that anxiety in the short term, yeah, you might just end up doing less stuff. If the thing that was driving you to do things was coming from a place of insecurity and you fall into this category of insecure overachiever, which is me in a nutshell, then yeah, you might just end up doing less stuff for a while. But then after that, you might just start doing stuff because you genuinely want to versus because you feel like you have to. And I'm not there yet, but it was inspiring to read that article because someone else has thought about it. And it feels like, that there is a place beyond this where I am doing things that are just like, you know, meaningful, like deep down. And it's not that this isn't meaningful, but it's like everything is so enmeshed right now. I don't know how much of this comes from a place of fear and how much of this comes from a place of like really, really truly being passionate about it. You know, it's all tangled up in a web. And maybe there is no way to fully untangle it, but I'm starting to see at least how it's all entwined and get a better sense of like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this other thing because, yeah, that's out of fear. And maybe I should be doing this other thing because it is out of passion. And it also reminded me of this video I watched just last night, actually. And I can look it up. It's on Reddit. It's the golfer, and I don't watch golf, so that's why I have to look this up. Golfer who won a bunch of stuff recently. What was his name? It's like Scotty? Golfer. Reddit. Let's just do Reddit golfer. Or like golfer wins. That should probably just come up with a bunch of stuff in the news, right? Yeah, Scotty Scheffler. There we go. Google's the best. Scotty Scheffler posted a video. I don't think he posted it, but someone reposted it on Reddit where he does his interview. And I don't know where it's from, but I would link to it in the show notes. But he was just basically like, yeah, I just won this like tournament. It's like basically a life dream. Like very few people have done it. This is like literally the pinnacle of this. And he's like, but you know, that only lasts a few minutes, right? This feeling of winning. And then I have to live the rest of my life. And so if all I only do is chase winning and winning that feeling only lasts for a few minutes, that like by definition is not a fulfilling way to live my life. And despite the fact that he's like, that is how I'm living my life, you know? But like he has things that are more important to him than just winning golf, despite being at the top of his game, you know? And I think you can substitute golf for really anything. It could be work, career, some other dream you're chasing, you know? And it's just like, just know that getting the thing that you think you want is not gonna be this nirvana state. It's like good to have goals and to like work towards a thing, but just know that the thing that actually matters, the thing that will actually maybe bring you happiness or fulfillment, comes from the inside, not from these external achievements. And it was just like fascinating to hear him just talk about that on an interview, where it's clearly like he's supposed to just be like hyping up golf. And I think the question was like, you know, are you gonna like, I don't know, mentor a new age of golfers like Tiger Woods did, you know? He's like, no, like, I don't want anyone to be doing what I'm doing. This isn't a fulfilling life. Like, yeah, I'm at the top of my game, but like, that isn't what life is about. For him, it's like his kids, you know, his wife and stuff. And that really kind of reminded me sometimes of like, what am I actually chasing by being so busy all of the time? And I'll switch over topics, but sorry for the longer philosophical rant. There's been a lot of life changes for me in the last 6 months in terms of just how I think about my time, myself, all of that. And that could be its own episode. I think it's been as profound for me as like the pandemic and Japanese jail, to be totally honest. But I'll save that for another episode. Okay, so I'll try and wrap up this weekly recap. The only other thing I wanted to mention that I've been working on this week is I am currently working on redesigning, or at least supplementing, the logo for the Daily Churn. When I first started this show in 2021, I literally just Googled like churner or something, and it brought this picture from like the 1800s of a woman churning milk while reading a book, and there's like a cat licking the churning pot barrel. And I thought that was hilarious. And that's how I ended up getting that as my podcast cover, because it's actually like a free use Library of Congress type of a photo. But since then, I've been like wanting to make some like t-shirts and stuff, just like either as giveaways or people can buy them if you really like the show. And it just doesn't work that well on a t-shirt. It's not really a logo. It's just an 1800s picture of someone. So I started a 99 Designs contest. If you're not aware of 99 Designs, it's a way to basically get logo ideas. So you put up a prize, like a few hundred dollars, and designers on 99 Designs will submit logos based on like what you ask for, and they try and win the prize. Only one person can win the prize. So it's a good way to get a lot of ideas. It's like AI, but with people. It's like a good way to get like a lot of different ideas from different people. And I got like 30 plus submissions on it, which is pretty cool. I did have to like explain in my brief what a churner is, why that's different from churning milk, and why we have a woman churning milk as the logo for the podcast, even though we're not talking about churning milk, we're talking about churning credit cards. It was a lengthy brief, so I'm surprised that many people even decided to do it and submit for it. But I've narrowed it down to eight of the top ones. And if you're listening to this on a Friday morning, the contest, because it's a contest, I have to pick six finalists by Friday afternoon, so this afternoon. So I have a top eight, and 99 Designs lets you create a poll for it. And so I'll link to the poll in the show notes. If you have a minute, I would really love it if you could just click it and look at the eight top designs that I picked with the help of folks on Discord. These are our favorite eight designs. And you can rate them, like which ones you like, which ones you don't. And you can even leave comments, because these aren't final yet. There's going to be another round after this where I get to tell the designers, hey, like, I really like this logo, but could you change it here and make this change before they make that final one? And then I can vote, I can decide who's the final winner. But for now, these are the top eight. And I'm really hoping to get some feedback on which of these eight are your favorite. And if you have any feedback for the designers on these eight, so that I can then forward it to them. I have to pick these six finalists by Friday afternoon. And so, yeah, massive appreciation if you do. And then hopefully, yeah, you'll see it on a t-shirt or a mug or something in the near future. And that could be kind of cool, not to like make money from it or just sell it at whatever the cost is, but it would be awesome to just like, I don't know, like walking in an airport lounge somewhere and you're like, oh dude, that's like a churner, and we can just talk about credit cards now, you know. But yeah, all right, sorry this episode wasn't as much churning as philosophy. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If not, that's cool too. Leave a comment either way, let me know what you think. I'm gonna keep doing these weekly recaps. And then hopefully in a few more of these, we'll just start pushing them out to Spotify and Apple as well to make it a bit easier to listen to. But until then, you can find them on the website at thedailychurnpodcast.com. Just click the episode and you can either play it or download it. And I will catch you all next Friday. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See ya.